This is the third part of a five-part conversation. It features Fred Reinhardt, a floor covering retailer from Philadelphia. He's the owner of Reinhardt Carpet Outlet. Fred, you were talking about the value of the leads you get and how you need to really keep tabs with how you follow up on those. How do you keep tabs on the effectiveness of your salespeople?
We're constantly evaluating close rates and reasons for why we're not closing and what mistakes we make and why are we making those mistakes and is it errors of omission or the errors of commission. And it's a constant self-examination of our operation so that we should be the best that we can possibly be. A couple weeks ago, I was proud to participate, and I love it when the guys at Shaw invite me down for dealer council. And we spent a couple of days at Barnsley Gardens in your neck of the woods, and Mr. Merritt, Mr. Bell came in and visited us, and Stevie Abernathy ran this show, and Scotty Humphrey and the gang, and Frieda Staten. These guys bring us down to try and help them understand what they need to do for the dealer network, the aligned dealers that they're tied in with. Well, just flip that around, and what Freddie Reinhardt, the store operator, has got to do is the same self-examination and the same kind of a model applies where we have to look at each and every kind of opportunity that comes to the store. And it's not just sales opportunities. It's all the other opportunities that go with running and operating a business and managing people and examining and seeking out what we could do better. What don't we do so good? And being honest with, know thyself, the good book says, and being honest with thyself and taking the appropriate actions.
Are your salespeople on commission?
Hardly. We're all salaried here, but salespeople can earn spiffs, incentives, bonuses, and cherries by practicing really good methods of selling. And that is over and above what the house expects and pays for in its salary presentation that it has with its its salespeople here.
So what do you do? I mean, do you do training on a regular basis, or how do you get all the salespeople singing off the same sheet?
It's not training like you guys talk about a lot and what I see in the trade magazines where we'll actually sit down and five of us will take an hour to sit and explain to us the latest techniques of click and lock and why that's going to be the best way to sell product these days. What we do, because there's only six of us here, David. We sell pounds and pounds of merchandise, and there's six of us, including the warehouse guys, and we all sell. So our task is to constantly keep an eye on every body that walks through the door or every lead that becomes a lead so that we can always have a clear channel of communication amongst ourselves so as to do what we've got to do, which is to prime directive, make sales. Make sales, make them clean, and if and when there's service needed after the sale, be there promptly and fast so that people know that the reliability that they assumed they were getting is genuinely there after the fact. So we don't do formal training programs like you guys have, but we read the trade mags a lot. We pass notes amongst each other. And we're constantly in communication, being six guys that operate within a 13,000-square-foot building, loaded to the ears with merchandise. And our task 6 days of the week is people got to take a little piece of our pie home with them, and we've got to get the most amount of money we can from our customers for doing that. So that's the marketing exchange process that we stay on top of here.
So say a woman walks in the front door. How do you make sure that she's going to get what she wants and it's going to give you the best return?
Well, first thing we do is make them feel comfortable, and then we ask questions. Warren Tyler is a good one at writing this. Kelly Kramer talks about this. But golly, good selling is also good listening. And good listening starts with asking the right questions and then listening. So hopefully, if we're doing our jobs right, you're comfortable from the moment you walk in the door just by coming into the store. And then you're not jumped on. You're not pounced on. It's not an aggressive, what can we do for you now, right now, lady? What brings you in the store? It's very much I won't say it's laid back, but what we are is trying to be very friendly so you're at ease. And once you're at ease, we ask you a couple questions, And it doesn't take very many questions to know how to size up and steer a customer towards what their interests are, and then following through, and like good salesmen do, we ask the right questions that hopefully then will bring you to the logical conclusion consummating itself in a sale.
Who makes most of the decisions? The woman?
You mean from a customer standpoint?
Right.
Well, when it's a husband and wife that come in together, yes, it's more often the woman than the man. Generally, the woman is there with something specific in mind. The man is along for either support, just from the support of being there and helping honey do her thing. And then oftentimes we'll see the man's the one that we talk the money with.
Uh-huh.
But I'd say more often than not, David, yes, it's largely the women that are responsible for the purchase action.
I gotcha. You were talking about just the operation, making sure that you're taking advantage of opportunities, and I suspect keeping overhead as low as you can. With you buying as much product as you buy, I suspect having an overabundance of inventory can be a major problem. How do you deal with that?
Well, you're right. What sets us apart from our competition is our inventory, and sometimes the bane of our operation is our inventory. The way we best manage that is by buying goods that hopefully the risk is eliminated as to its ability to be turned. Also, demonstrated margin makers. We don't take a lot of chances on the buys we make. Buys we make are pretty much no-brainer buys, David. When you buy a running line of goods from the factory and you know that 10 colors sell, I feel it's my obligation to have those 10 colors on the floor. If I'm missing a color, I can miss a sale because now my customer doesn't see what they want and don't get it when they want it. So if, let's use Shaw's Dyersburg as a for instance, and Dyersburg happens to be a successful item in their line for a lot of years. It's a 12 and 15 foot wide textured plush carpet. It's for us considered a medium price point. I know my brother-in-law in California would say, oh, Dyersburg would be the bottom of the line for me. Well, with us, it's a medium price point kind of a carpet at retail. Well, we stock the colors we know that are the bread and butter colors in 12 foot as well as 15 foot. I don't want to lose an opportunity to execute a sale right then and there. And then as we start to get low on a given color, just basic inventory management. You don't have to go to college to figure this one out, David. You don't need a computer model to keep you up to date. If winter wheat is a good color and winter wheat, you're down to the reorder point, you reorder winter wheat. You don't want to be without winter wheat or crimson or dark denim or plaster or whatever the colors are that, you know, are successful for us, let's say. So if we applied our model to anybody else who's stocking goods, you eliminate a lot of the risk by not reaching for things that you hope will sell. You go for things that you know will sell. It's a no-brainer.
Mm-hmm.
Now the challenge becomes, what do you do when times get slow and maybe your inventory turn isn't as good as you'd like it to be? Ah, now we come up with new ways maybe to show the product. Maybe we cut pieces of the product and we stand them up as remnants because we can sell remnants as readily as we sell roll goods. And if I don't have enough winter wheat standing up on the floor, hey, the guys will come to me and say, yo, Fred, we can use 12 by 15s of Dyersburg winter wheat. And by the way, Dyersburg comes in a junior version, so if a junior version can sell for less money and cost us less money, but fills a color void, maybe we'll fill color voids with the junior version and hold on to the higher price goods for, you know, roll good sales. For us, a wall-to-wall jar is typically like maybe a 50, 60, 70-yard deal. I know a lot of my friends in this industry, they'll look at me and laugh and they'll go, that's a bedroom job for us. And I know that to be true, but we are what we are. It is what it is. We're not trying to be all things to all people. So in our bread and butter offering, keeping it on hand is key to being successful. Managing it, it's one of the things that separates a good manager, a profitable operator, from a non-profitable operator. So, you know, we're hands-on people here, David. You can't run the business and not have your hands on it. By the way, you can do it with computers, you can do it without computers, and you don't have to have college degrees to do all this stuff, but what you need is an ethic that maintains your involvement and reaffirms your commitment to just stay on top of your stuff mm-hmm. and manage your details. My attitude is I want to be a hands-on manager, and I pride myself on being a hands-on manager and operator that way.
This will wind up the third part of a five-part series. We're talking with Fred Reinhart. He's a floor covering retailer. He owns Reinhart Carpet Outlet. It's based in Philadelphia. We'll air the fourth part of this series tomorrow, and this is Floor Radio.